We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Pelicans basketball has been played. After waiting all summer and wondering what the team is going to look like, we have our first taste of it, and it was a loss. 102-107 in New Orleans to the Denver Nuggets. I will say, I watched this basketball game, and unlike last year, I didn't walk away thinking, why do I watch basketball? So, Michael, did you walk away with were you entertained?
I was entertained! Yeah, I mean, the other team's trying hard, they're trying to win too. Mm-hmm. One team's going to win, one's going to lose. If the only time you walk away from these games entertained or feeling like your 2.5 hours was well spent is if your team wins. Not going to be happy very often, so yeah, I'll take this loss. I'll remember this game for sure. So I'll take 81 more like this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Anthony Davis stole the show. Like, he was an amazing night: 50 points, 16 rebounds, 5 assists, 7 steals, 4 blocks, 3 turnovers. He was at -3 overall in a game they lost by 5. He played 41 minutes, so. The first question I have for you is he going to have to do that every night for us to have a chance?
Yeah, and I think that pace is easily sustainable. I mean, if you look at NBA history, Wilt Chamberlain put up 50.4 points per game.
Well,
so definitely possible. So I don't see any reason why Anthony Davis can't and won't keep this up.
Well, it's very, very easy to score a point a minute in the NBA. Many people have done it.
I mean, and he almost took a shot a minute. Like, it cracks me up where people were saying Russell Westbrook's usage is just going to be insane this year. Like, he's going to have nothing on Anthony Davis. It's crazy. He actually slowed down as the game went on as far as his usage, his shots, some of those stats. So, but they need it. I mean, other guys got open looks, and they're going to hit them in other games. So, yeah, I'm not going to take too much from that. Solomon Hill's not going to go 1-for-7 every game, and Buddy's not going to struggle as much as he did. But there was good and bad from this game, but I don't think you could walk away from this game being anything but excited about the fact that the guy that Anthony Davis, we always knew, could have been, it looks like he is ready to be that aggressive guy, and I don't think it's any coincidence that Anderson, Gordon, and to some extent Tyreek are gone, but there's no more ambiguity over if this is 100% his team, 80% his team, whatever. That's the part biggest from this game I love leaving.
I mean, it's absolutely clear this is Tim Frazier's team now. that's obvious.
There were part of the fourth quarter where Tim Frazier, I think he did think it was his team.
He did go a hero ball a couple times. But my boy Tim, there's nothing to push me off the wagon.
Yeah. I mean, there were some positives. It's just the negatives. I could see some Pelicans fans before the season started starting to talk themselves into this defense being average or maybe good. And then even coming from this game, I know people are going to say, well, they only gave up 47 in the second half. They figured some things out, and they're getting better. The defense is still very bad, you know, for different reasons. It's still got a ways to go. The shooting, I'm less worried about. That'll come and go. It always was going to. But the defense, if you were trying to sell yourself on this team, making a big leap in the getting into the 10 to 15 range this year, I don't think that's happening.
Wow. I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
So so here's where I was encouraged watching the defense, and it was only certain personnel, but they were switching on the perimeter more efficiently than I have seen this team do in years. They were able to track guys on the perimeter before they got penetration better than they had in the past. They still had some of the same breakdowns when they would get the ball into the paint and the Denver would swing the ball around and get wide open threes. But you know, you can't find a team in the league that doesn't give up open threes here and there. So that will probably start to clean up a little bit as they get used to each other. I will say the number one issue with the defense that I saw was they couldn't end a possession to end their lives. Or that didn't sound right. To save their lives, to end their lives, that'd be a really bad choice. I have this possession, and I kill myself. Because it was embarrassing how many times they would actually force a bad shot, and then just Fareed, or you know, half the time it was like Will Barton would just come in and take the ball, and they'd get a nice new open look. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, and I mean, a big part of that was what Denver really smartly started doing is they would put Anthony Davis in the pick and roll. Anthony Davis would have to switch, and then they would basically shoot with that guy, and then there was nobody left to grab a rebound.
Yep.
I mean, if you want to talk about my biggest disappointments from this game, yeah, people will say Solomon Hill missed a bunch of open shots. Yeah. And his stat line, my biggest disappointment from this game is Solomon Hill getting one rebound.
Yeah.
It's just, you want to hope that you could play him at the, you know, at the four. You want to hope that you could play Terrence Jones with Anthony Davis more. It's just, it's not possible because neither of those guys have any desire to rebound. I would have taken the same exact stat line from Solomon Hill if you would have given me 5 or 6 rebounds, and he was in position to get them. If you would give me 5, 6, 7 rebounds instead of one, even with all those missed shots, I would have been absolutely fine with you. But, you know, Cunningham plays 9 minutes, he gets no boards. Terrence Jones plays 18, he gets 2 defensive boards. Ajinta plays 11, he gets no defensive board. Like, really, Anthony Davis can't be everywhere. He can't be contesting shots on the perimeter.
Oh, he tried.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was close. And are you looking at the box score right now?
No.
Okay.
Who was I looked second? At it earlier, but I didn't.
Who was second on this team in rebounds by a fairly good margin?
So I want to say Frazier because I can remember him ripping down some defensive boards and going, and I can't remember anybody else, but maybe it was Stevenson.
No, you're right. Tim Frazier.
How many did he have?
He had 5.
The second on the team with 5.
Oh, and it's not really particularly close. Jones and Stevenson had 3. Ashik had 1. Hill had 1. Moore had 1. Cunningham 0, Ajinsa 1, Galloway 2, Heald 1, Stevenson 3. Like, nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, wanted to. And now, granted, Denver didn't miss a ton of shots because they were either making shots or turning it over.
Right.
What are we looking at here? We're looking at 46 missed shots. But, you know, other than David, I mean, 20 of the 29 defensive rebounds came from Davis or Frazier. I mean, that's just, that's insane.
Yes.
The Denver Nuggets got far more rebounds than every, the Denver Nuggets got more, when they missed a shot, if Frazier or AD wasn't getting it, it was more likely that a Denver player was getting it than literally anybody else.
Yeah.
All their other players combined didn't have as many defensive rebounds as the Nuggets had offensive rebounds. So, to me, that's the biggest thing, because either you're going to leave Davis around the rim to hopefully collect the rebound, but he's not out contesting shots or getting those seven steals on the perimeter, or he's going to be out there getting those steals and contesting successfully shots, but nobody's going to be there to get a rebound, and then a guy like Jokic is going to get a bunch of easy points in the paint.
Yeah.
There's just no third. There's no alternative.
Well, before we start dwelling too much on the team, I do want to just stop. I mean, what we watched from Anthony Davis tonight was pretty special. Like, 50 points in any context is pretty amazing, but it literally felt sometimes like he was everywhere out there. He's getting steals, he's getting blocks, he was defending the guy. They were switching so he'd have to guard the main ball handler, Gallinari, over and over. I mean, it was crazy. But just offensively, I was in a pretty settled mind after watching him last year that he's not ready to be a full featured scorer. Which sounds crazy considering he had the games where he scored 59 points, but it just felt like he didn't have the moves or the aggression or the ability to get the ball, make two or three dribbles or moves, and then score. Did this game change? Did you feel that way about him? And did this game change your mind at all? Or what did you think about his offensive game just in general?
I mean, it's hard not to be impressed with pretty much anything. You know, everything. My one thing is I still don't know if I could give him the ball and isolate. The one play that made me feel differently, I'm curious to hear the three plays that just, if I say go, that stand out in your mind. But one for me is definitely AD with the ball in the low post. The double team was coming, and he spun baseline with incredible quickness and, you know, had a little two-foot floater. Like, to me, that was a play that just stands out just because I don't trust that I could get him the ball on the block and he's going to score. I like getting it to him on the move or once we've already broken the defense a little bit or in transition or just on a straight pop, catch, and shoot. But that play, you know, to me was very Blake Griffin-esque when Blake is, you know, going at 100% where he kind of is creating his own shot. And plays like that make me feel a little better until, you know, I start thinking he had Kenneth Faried on him a lot tonight. He didn't have, you know, whatever, insert above average defensive player. So I think he could be that type of player. I still think he's going to need at least two or three more shooters around him to do this and win games consistently.
Yeah. Yeah, the one play that stood out, I know exactly what play you're thinking of because when I saw it, I was pretty jazzed. But the other one was it was in the second quarter. He caught the ball at the elbow. He had a little on him, so they forced the ball into him, and Jokic charged across to try to contest. And as soon as he saw Jokic break for him, he spun baseline, forced his way through the little guy on him, and just scored. And it was an immediate decision. It was powerful. It was quick. And it was what you needed to do there if you weren't going to just give the ball up. And then, of course, I also really love there's a pick and roll with him and Frazier where he caught the ball and Faried was sizing it up for a block. And Faried's, that's one of the things he can do. We saw a couple really nice back, recovery blocks by Faried in this game. And so Davis, instead of trying to go up and power it down, he just hit the smooth floater. And we saw him do that kind of in the second, in like his rookie year and his second season. I remember thinking, like, he's got really good touch on floaters, which surprised me, because I kind of expect big men not to be able to do that shot. They never have to normally in college. They can just take it to the basket and dunk on fools. And the fact that he can still do that and he knows when to execute it to keep people off balance, I mean, it was pretty exciting for me. So Davis was amazing. All game long, I just kept saying, damn, like throwing himself on the floor. He wanted this win bad.
I agree. And I mean, he beat himself up because it would be stupid to say that his turnover cost them the game, but since they were down three with the ball and the turnover comes at that time,
yep.
You know, to me, I kind of like that, because if you're telling me they're going to lose this game anyway, you know, Davis, if he has that good of a game and doesn't make a big mistake, he might go into that locker room like, oh my God, I did all that and we still didn't win. What more could I do? Instead, he's going to go in that locker room beating himself up and saying that he was the reason for the loss, even though it's crazy, which means he's going to keep coming out hard every time. So, you know, the turnover is big. My favorite play of his offensively was the one where he had the ball in the mid-post. He was backing down one of the big guys. I can't even pretend to keep up at this point. But then he spun, and he saw that Nelson was coming to double-team him, and he threw that little pass to Lance on the baseline for a layup.
Mm-hmm.
To me, his evolution this year is going to be as a playmaker. I understand there's still things he has to get better at offensively to improve his efficiency, but I have total faith they'll get there, whether it's this year, next year, or the year after. To me, I wanted to see steps in his playmaking, and I thought we saw a lot of that. He led a transition with a no-look pass to Etwan Moore, who got to the free throw line, so that won't show up in the box score. But, like, I think he's becoming a better playmaker, and to me, that's a huge win for this season if that happens.
Yeah. I agree, and 5 assists is a good start. There are two stats I know somebody is going to have written about or zeroed in on. You're going to see an article about them tomorrow probably, but I have two stats. I want you to get your take. Are they
somebody meaningful? Or is everybody going to be talking?
Everybody will be talking about, but nobody will be talking about this. So I just want to get your take on these two stats. Are they meaningful or not meaningful in the greater scheme of things? So the first one. 38 field goals tonight for the Pelicans, 31 assists. Does that mean anything to you, or does it just mean that they weren't making other shots?
I mean, I would say meaningful. I would say that this is, one, it's part of a trend, and no, we don't really count preseason, but it happened in preseason to a large extent. I know I was listening to one of Jake's podcasts this week, and he had the exact percentage. But I want to say it's somewhere around 70% or more of their field goals in the preseason were assisted on, which is whatever the number was, it was way up. Might have been 78%, and last year it was 69%. I don't know. But it was way up from last season, so this is a continuation of that. And aside from, and I can't wait to talk about this guy with you, aside from the couple of times in which Lance Stephenson jumped in front of Tim Frazier for a pass and did his best Tyreke Evans impersonations, I felt that this wasn't only a thing that the stats say, this was something that my eyeballs saw too in this team moving the ball more than I had seen.
There is only one, so other than Lance and Terrence Jones, there was only one selfish player on this team tonight, and that was Anthony Davis. And you wanted him to be selfish. So
right.
That's not a problem. Right. I thought Jones a couple times made poor decisions, but even him, like when I felt he made a poor decision, it wasn't like he was trying to manufacture his own shot in those situations. He was actually trying to feed the ball to Davis in bad places. So whatever. Stevenson, yeah. we'll talk about him in a second.
Yeah, so, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, but I did like the, I mean, people moved the ball freely. They, like, there was nobody playing really much hero ball except for a couple seconds with Frazier and a couple, well, all his minutes with Lance Stevenson. So, second stat I wanted to get your take on. Does it matter that the team went 3 of 19 from 3?
I'm going to say yes, but in a good way.
Okay.
So, I like, the thing I hate is when a guy misses shots and then he stops taking them. I think that makes it so easy for the defense. Solomon Hill was off, and I like that he was still taking open threes. They weren't forced. They were open. They were the shots he was supposed to take. You know, and so he's the one that stands out to me as far, I mean, obviously Buddy went 0 for 3. One was incredibly forced, but had to be late in the game. But, I mean, to me, they were good shots. I just don't know, you know, how many good shooters we have on this team. If Solomon Hill is a terrible shooter, then really of your high-minute guys, at least the ones who are playing right now, who, I mean, Etuan Moore is your only proven NBA shooter at this point, right?
Right. I expect that Hield will be that way, but you can't call him proven right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the 19 for me is more significant, especially considering the guys we have. I like that they took open ones. On certain days, they'll fall. They didn't tonight, obviously, but obviously they're not going to shoot 15.8% from the season. Give me those same looks all year. You know, and then, of course, moving forward, and I think it'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the way I looked at the three-point shots was I didn't see any three-point shot that I completely rolled my eyes at except for one by Terrence Jones. Like, I don't know why Jones took that shot, really. Like, he's not a three-point shooter as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, and the only one that I screamed at was the there was an above-the-break three from Solomon Hill that was open, but it, like, clanged the bottom left side of the... I'm like, oh, my God. Like, when you miss a shot like that, you're just not a shooter. Like,
yeah.
Shooters miss short, they miss long. You don't miss like that. That just shows me that that shot is not going to consistently be in your range. But whatever, he made 7 of 11 against the Raptors, so let's give him $50
million. That's right.
I don't want to put it off any longer. We haven't talked before the podcast. I want to get your, as much as you could give me, your overall good, bad, ugly grade, however you want to do it. Talk to me about what you thought about Lance Stevenson in this singular game tonight.
So he's a mixed bag for me, like, because there are moments where I felt like he was being impactful in a good way, but I also felt like, I feel like he's got no balance. Really, like, as a basketball player, like, he's not particularly high basketball IQ. He will make poor decisions when he has, but he has enough athleticism and talent that some of those poor decisions can turn into pretty impressive looking and feeling plays. And when that happens, he gets pumped and he starts making decisions that are worse because he starts getting into guys in ways that don't make sense. He starts overplaying things. He doesn't feel to me like a guy who's going to give you a balanced effort and be able to make the right decisions. That said, there were moments on defense where he was the best on-ball defender we had out there. I mean, he was actually getting into guys the right way and pressuring them and forcing them. I guess Moore maybe was better in certain situations, but like Stevenson was pretty good at moments, but every time he touched the ball on offense, it's watching Tyreek Evans again for me.
Yeah, no, a mixed bag is perfect. I feel, again, judging by Twitter or message boards, I really shouldn't do that. They're just the only people that are speaking. So, you know, I tend to think that what they're saying, everybody is thinking, but probably not. But I feel like Lance gets huge leeway from some people because of how undeniably how much effort he puts into the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you could deny that he wants to do his best on every play, and he, you know, his facial expression, and he looks so into the game.
Dante Cunningham.
Yeah, coming from a franchise that had the Aminus and even Davis in other seasons, like, I think that buys a lot of leeway from the fans because they just want that. They associate emotion with how much somebody cares, which has some credence, but I don't buy into it as much as most. But for me, there's so many plays, and I noticed the same exact thing with you. Go back, if you guys get a chance, and watch his first two layups, of which he didn't do anything. They were completely created for him, essentially. The next plays after that, he makes sure he gets the ball, and then he goes 1,000 miles per hour and does something stupid. On the first one, it was a charge. On the second one, it only shows that he has two turnovers, but he really has three, because on the second one, he drives into a crowd in transition and then kicks it to Etwan Moore in the corner, but the pass is like 5 feet off, so Moore has to dive for it, essentially, and just try to save it back into bounds, so the turnover goes to Moore for some reason. And then Denver starts off the possession with numbers and gets a transition three out of it. So a 5 to 6 point swing right there. And it's just, you know, it happened after almost every good play he made. He got all charged up and get me the ball. I mean, like, I've played with so many pickup players like him. You know, I just recognize it when I see it, and it's a little infuriating, but then he goes and he does some, you know, that dunk he had, you know, the transition, the pass he made to Anthony Davis that Fareed got the block on that would have tied the game.
Yeah.
That was an amazing pass. Like, nobody else on this team, I know you love your boy Tim Frazier, is capable of that pass. The defense he did on Danilo Gallinari in stretches, nobody else on this team, even Alonzo G, if they kept him, could have been that physical and stayed in front of him. So
yep.
Mixed bag. I mean, you're totally right. There's it depends what you want to see with him. If you want to see the good, you could make an argument, and you probably believe right now that Lance Stephenson was the second best player for us tonight, if you just want to see the good. If you're looking for the bad, you know, you could make an argument that he made huge plays that cost us some stretches tonight. It's, you know, it's a pretty remarkable watching that guy. My biggest concern is, and the thing I don't like is, yeah, you're trying to win games now. I get it. You have to. But if Lance Stephenson doesn't make this team, how many more minutes, Royal Jelly, opportunities, whatever, does Buddy Hield get tonight?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that, like, Hield was 100% bowing to Stephenson. Bowing is not the word, but, like, deferring to him. Like, if you go back and watch the minutes, they actually ran a play for Hield on the very first possession that he was on the floor, which I loved that. I actually thought that was just a great thing. Here, Rook, make a decision. And he actually made the right decision with the play, too, so I was pretty happy. But from that point on, like, Stephenson, every minute he's out there, that Hield's out there, like, Hield would get the ball, swing it. He might have had a crack, but if Stephenson was next in order along the perimeter, he passed it to Stephenson, and then he cut through. So you're right. Like, Hield probably would be absorbing more of those. We'd also probably see more of Langston Galloway, who was also a mixed bag for me. I'm going to make you make two calls. First, I want you to give me your non-Anthony Davis Pelicans MVP for the game, and then I'll tell you mine.
I want to pause for a second because to me it would be hard to think of anybody else, but I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody. Okay, no, I'm not. Tim Frazier.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, so the issue with him on defense is a pure size issue. Mm-hmm. If he runs into another body, he's going to come to a complete stop and have to restart. Like, he's just so slight in so many ways. And, you know, whenever his man cut down the lane, even if he was right there with him, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't matter. His guy would get passed to and have a pretty easy lay. Like, he's just so slight on defense.
And they were also going against a very big team in Denver tonight.
Yeah.
Like, everybody in Denver is long.
But on the perimeter, if you're just talking about one-on-one, oh, God, I just saw Eric Gordon get a pass out in the corner, drive athletically to the layup, and hit an easy reverse layup. This is making me sick. Anyway, but one-on-one perimeter defense, he stays in front of his guy, he battles. On the offensive end, I like the variety of things he did. He got in the pick and roll with Anthony Davis and made some great decisions. He, you know, towards the end of the game when he saw they needed a bucket, he has some great hesitation moves and a feel for the bet. Like, there's things that I wish we could Monstar into Drew Holiday's body. I wish we could take some Tim Frazier things and put them into Drew Holiday's body, because I think I like a lot of things Frazier does a little more than Holiday. Holiday obviously has the size, the better shooting touch or whatever, but gosh, if I could combine those two, I'd be such a happy man. And then even little things that you wouldn't expect. There was a possession in which they put him into the post on offense.
Yeah.
And even though he's small, he's bagging his guy down and he's creating passing lanes and getting guys shot. So I just, you know, Tim Frazier, he has his deficiencies on defense, but it's not for a lack of effort. And everybody's got deficiencies, but he was number two for me. And it wasn't really close. If I was forced to pick another guy, it would have probably been Etuan Moore, but those are the only ones who come to mind at all.
Yeah, so, and I'll be honest, I might be doing this just because I've pumped up Tim Frazier all summer, and I want to make it seem like I'm not just blindly on the Tim Frazier bandwagon. I probably would have picked Etuan Moore, and it was more because... Moore. It was more because early in the game, in the second quarter, their defense had been kind of abysmal, especially early, and they just could not handle those two, Jokic and Nurkic, in the middle. But there was a series of switches that Moore just kept executing perfectly to make Will Barton a non-entity in this game over and over again, and it was really fun to watch him do that. And if you go back and you watch when Will Barton actually broke loose, it was either in transition, where he got free, or Buddy Hield or Galloway were guarding him. So I was pretty impressed with the way Moore was able to just deny him and make him work and just force him to give up the ball. So I really enjoyed watching Moore tonight, just as a nerd basketball fan.
Yeah, I mean, that the Moore Drew Holiday backcourt could be very good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I really liked, I know the steals will make it seem like I'm pointing out something obvious, but not even the steals. I liked how active the Pelicans' hands, like, there was a lot of deflections mm-hmm. that they didn't even wind up getting. I would be really curious to see the amount of deflections that they had tonight, not just steals. There's one play I remember where I forget who it was for Denver, but basically they were about to drive down the lane on the wing, and I was like, oh my God, there's nobody there. This is going to be an easy layup or dunk. I've seen this for years. And then Langston Galloway, who was defending his man in the corner, who obviously couldn't get there, but he reached in and basically got a deflection that wound up going right back to Denver, but it thwarted their possession. There were just numerous plays like that that I just hadn't seen in years. And while I think that this defense is still going to be bad because they're not going to be able to end possessions, and, you know, decent teams are going to get tons of points in the paint. Those are things that have me slightly optimistic, as I haven't seen this team playing with that kind of activity in a long time.
And that's what I meant when we opened this, and I said I like the perimeter defense. Like, our perimeter guys were athletic, and they are getting into it. And it wasn't always turning out for the best every single time, but like, if we were watching Eric Gordon or Tyreek Evans in any of those situations, is he even going to try to get into the play?
No.
Right. They'll do
a fake little reach, but not really.
Or if it's Eric Gordon, he'll slap on the arm and then be like, what, and have the whiny bitch face.
Speaking of Eric Gordon for three, and he misses. I completely agree. There's some positives. It's just I don't know how much it matters if that perimeter defense is that good, and you're either going to hope for 15 to 20 rebounds from Anthony Davis, or you're just going to understand that you're not going to end possessions and that the other team's going to score 50 to 70 in the paint.
Yeah.
How optimistic can you get based off of that? I don't honestly know what the solution for that is or could be. Oshik was doing his job boxing out his guy, and they had two monsters back there. You need some perimeter guys flying in and getting boards, especially, like, the thing that bothers me so much is how can you be that poor on the defensive glass and you don't have any fast break points either?
Right.
So it's like, just send everybody to the glass then. If you're not getting fast breaks anyway, make it a numbers game at that point and find a way to grab the rebound. Like, it should be one or the other. You're getting all these steals. You're not sending everybody to the glass. Well, okay, then we must have 20 fast break points. Oh, no, we didn't get our first one until, you know, a breakaway by AD late in the second. So it's just, that's the part for me, is you just can't get that excited. And none of the guys coming back, like, Drew is a slightly above average rebounder, but he's not going to be better than Frazier was tonight.
Nope.
Tyreek, I know the team is talking about him coming back. He'll help a little bit if he actually plays.
Right.
So, but Quincy ain't helping. So where's the help going to come from?
It's Diallo time. All right. So, I think I actually have a pretty good idea who you're going to say, but this is the second part of the call you have to make. Pelicans LVP. Who was the least valuable player on this Pelicans team?
So I told you what we used to call this in the pickup games in Orlando that I played with Chandler Parsons, didn't I?
No.
It happened after every game. We had a used Subway wrapper, and you were brought out to half court, and you were given the Subway non-factor player of the game. Like, it was a whole ceremony. All you wanted, I think everybody played so hard, because all you wanted to be is one of the nine guys who didn't get the Subway non-factor.
How often did you get the Subway non-factor?
I would say less than 5% of the time, because you could always count on me for rebounds, and my turnover rate was remarkably low. So the Subway non-factor usually went to the person, which it actually shouldn't have. It shouldn't have went to the one with turnovers, because that person technically is a factor for the other team. It should have been the net neutral player, just based on the title we gave it. But it actually usually went to the worst player, which worse and non-factor aren't the same thing. But anyway, I rarely got it because you could always count on me on the glass and, on defense, and I never turned it over. Historically low turnover rates.
Nice.
But anyway, so the Subway non-factor of the game, God, I already know who you're going to say, but I disagree with it. I'm going to say least valuable players. He didn't play enough minutes. This is hard. If I was going to go, it has to be a guy, though, that played significant minutes. Because my gut is to say Ejinsa, But he played 11 minutes. How much can you hurt in 11 minutes?
I don't know, if you're fouling the crap out of everything that moves.
Yeah, but it doesn't. I'm going to say Solomon Hill, and again, it's not because of the missed shots. It's that guy has to rebound. If you're going to put him in that position and you're going to say, okay, we trust you could play some small ball four, he's got to rebound, and he just didn't. Ajinsa Hill. I'm going to go with Solomon Hill.
All right. All right, so you say you know who I'm going to pick. So I need to hear now who you think I'm going to pick, because I can't tell you and then have you just say, well, I knew it, because I've actually been waiting for you to say, I called it on Twitter, they were going to get close at the end, and then their offense is going to fail. I'm Mike Stradamus. I've been waiting for you to say it the whole time. And in fact, while I was watching it with my buddy, I said, God, I hope they don't lose this game, because Mike is going to go on my podcast after this and be like, oh, I knew this was going to happen.
No, I don't do that. I think you're going to say Dante Cunningham.
It's Dante Cunningham.
No!
God!
First of all, he had a three-point play that was not a charge.
But he was awful. I'm sorry.
He made the best pass of the game. That pass in transition was awesome. You got to admit that.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't tell me you don't remember.
That was very nice. I'm not gonna disagree with that.
Okay.
But I will say this.
Okay.
At four distinct minutes in the game, I said, how the hell is that guy wide open? Who's supposed to be guarding him? And then you see Dante Cunningham enter the screen after completely losing a perimeter player. If you're going to be the backup small forward on this team, you can't, like, lose the lumbering Danilo Gallinari. I know the dude is savvy. I know he's great at drawing fouls. But if you're 3 feet behind him on a drive, you're crap. You should not be playing that position.
Yeah.
Maybe Alvin Gentry is the LVP because he's playing him in that spot.
I just don't know how you could get least valuable player if you play 9 minutes, but...
Because, like, wide-open layup after wide-open layup from the guy he's guarding. Terrible.
I would say...
Terrible.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't
I
like
think
Dante
he got
Cunningham,
really
sorry.
Screwed. I think that should have been a three-point play. I mean, how big of a switch is that? A three-point play to a charge and basically a turnover? That infuriated me because I just... To me, refs don't go with the spirit of the rule. The reason we have a charge is so a big guy can't just steamroll a little guy. But now it's got to the point where if you got your feet into position a quarter second before a guy leaps and he leaps into you, then that's a charge and that's a great play by you. Like, that's so stupid. What else was Cunningham supposed to do in that position? Literally a quarter second before he leaves his feet, Fareed slides over there and gets it. That's not good defense. Like, that infuriates me. So because he got robbed on that, I can't give him the least valuable player.
No, you
should have had 3 points, and those would have been three big points.
So basically it's a pity vote for you.
I think Ajinsa, I think if you want to argue who the worst player was for them tonight, you could argue Cunningham versus Ajinsa, but I think Ajinsa was even worse.
Yeah, I don't know if I can disagree with you. Like, they are so closely tied. All Ajinsa did was come in and then look sadly at the refs over and over again. He's morose.
Would you give up a pick to get rid of Ajinsa at this point?
I just wouldn't play him. I wouldn't give up a pick. Just don't play him at all. Like, can Cheick Diallo be actually worse than Ajinsa at this point? Even if he's like a complete train wreck as a rookie, he's going to do more than give you four fouls and one rebound in 11 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, how many more games do you give Ajinsa? Is it possible that this was a bad matchup and he could be average in the other one? Like, that would be the only thing I would say. But yeah, if this is a sign of things to come, there's a 0% chance Diallo could be worse.
Yeah, so here is what I would say about Ajinsa. I am a strong believer that if you have decided that this is the appropriate player, you give him at least 5 to 10 games in that role to make sure to just give him a chance to prove it. And if he doesn't, then he's done. And you don't play him for, you know, some period of time. If somebody comes in and takes his job and takes it convincingly, Diallo comes in and's grabbing some nice rebounds, which is what he's supposed to be able to do. I mean, he's a pogo stick. Then maybe Ajinsa never sees light of day again, and that's Ajinsa's lookout. He had the chance. That's my take on it. Like,
but here's the thing: if you just stop playing Ajinsa, then it becomes really hard to. I mean, I would think that the logic might be: all right, let's try to get 10 good games out of him and trick somebody into taking him in a trade. Because if you just totally stop playing him,
yeah. But what if you get 10 crappy games out of him?
Yeah,
that doesn't help you.
But would it hurt you? I mean, then you're in the same place as if you don't play him. So at least there's a chance that if you play him and he plays decent, you could get rid of him.
So you're another team's GM and your backup center is injured. You're the Wizards GM. I call you up and say, you can have Ajinsa for a bag of flaming poo. You get to FedEx me a bag of flaming poo if you take Ajinsa. Are you even considering it?
No, I mean, me, no, because I've seen him. Your hope would be...
I'll give you a second-round pick. Are you taking him?
Probably not. Like, no, I would just go get some guy from the D-League.
Exactly. Like, that's
yeah, but my hope would be Toronto doesn't watch any of the other games, and then we play him against Toronto, he plays well again, and then, you know, maybe you trick him that way. Maybe you Doc Rivers him where, you know... If let's say you play him in 15 games and only three of them are good, well then there's three GMs you might be able to call who might think he's good. I mean,
it's possible.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know, but
he's bad.
Yeah, it's one of those things where to me the dream scenario for a while, and this is sad that these are my dreams, but I was hoping that they would just be able to dump Ajinsa and then keep both G and Lance.
Doesn't Ajinsa...
Like, I have no use for Ajinsa at all. And the longer we go, the longer, you know... It's not like it's a huge contract in this era. It's going to be, what, 4% of next year's cap?
Yeah.
Which is similar to like a $2 million a year contract back in the day. I mean, it's nothing. And I still don't even think we could get rid of his flaming bag of garbage. So
yeah. So doesn't that like make you sad though? Really? Like, you realize 2 years ago, Ajinsa had a 20 PER for the team, a 20 PER.
Yeah. And supposedly he's in better shape now, more flexible. You just have to wonder if this is, and maybe that's how you sell him to another GM is, oh yeah, it's our fault. It's just a terrible system for him. But we know he could still be good somewhere else. Maybe. You know, Monty's there with the Spurs. Who's their backup center right now? I don't even know.
Dwayne Dedman.
You're
not beating that out.
But maybe they wanted an offensive guy to go back and forth. Dedman for defense and
Pau Gasol.
I don't know, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is maybe he has believers somewhere around the league. That's your only hope. I know it's not likely. I'm just talking out loud of what the only hopes could be.
Yeah. Okay, so overall, you feeling optimistic about our next game or really pessimistic about our next game?
I don't think I will feel optimistic about this team till minimum January, probably next year, but I feel more optimistic about this franchise because aside from future injuries, pretty much all of my Anthony Davis worries have been answered between this preseason and today's game.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, though, because the next game is Golden State Warriors, Friday night. Everybody get ready to watch it. Do you think it became more likely or less likely or just didn't really matter that they were going to win that game on Friday against the Golden State Warriors after Golden State Warriors got sucker punched by San Antonio in the season opener?
Yeah, I would say the likelihood went from 0.1% to 0.09%. Like,
Come on. Obviously, Kevin Durant made the Golden State Warriors a bad team.
Yeah, I watched that game, and the Spurs played such a good game.
The Spurs were hitting every – like, tonight, yeah. We missed open shot after open shot. Like, the Spurs just – if it was open, they weren't missing. It was sick.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was and man, I couldn't help but watch that game and just – so just one real quick tangent and get your thoughts on it.
No,
but,
our team couldn't hang
so,
with either of those teams.
Honestly, like – the Lance Stephenson thing, and again, I think he's going to help now. He's exactly what we need now. But either way, we're not winning many of the next 15, 20 games. So I don't really care about wins and losses. What I would have loved to see happen is just give Quincy Ford that final roster spot. You know, if obviously the team didn't want to keep G. They didn't think that he could help them. So that's fine. Don't give it to Lance. Just go give it to Quincy Ford. And the reason I say that is you look at the Spurs, and then you look at a guy like Jonathan Simmons, who was a nobody, but they gave a couple of minutes in a couple of games. They really showcased him in the preseason and summer league. They kept working with him. I'm sure they made him, you know, a huge part of their development in every practice. And now it looks like they have another, you know, really, really good player on their hands that came out of nowhere, was undrafted, wasn't even good in college. And it's like, with the Pelicans, every decision is so short-sighted, and you could argue that it has to be because of the injuries. My argument is go the other way of, look, you're going to lose these games anyway. Let's be realistic. Instead of choosing Nate Robinson over Bryce DeJean Jones last year, or choosing Lance Stephenson over Quincy Ford because they're the better player, take the worst player, but the guy who maybe 10% chance could be a Jonathan Simmons, and just keep pouring resources into guys like that and see if you ever land one, because that's going to change your franchise. Lance Stephenson playing well and helping you win maybe two more games this year and not being with you long term, that's not going to change your franchise one bit. That's my rant. What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? Where am I insane?
So while I agree with the general idea, so I'm not going to really argue with that, I will say that is a really hard sell for Anthony Davis. Like, you watched him tonight. He left everything on that floor trying to win that game. And if he feels in his head, if he thinks that Lance Stephenson is going to help him win some games this year, so he was not going to have to go through another tire fire like last season, you might want to just bring in Lance Stephenson rather than take that 10% chance, just to hopefully give Anthony Davis a feeling that you're at least going all out to try to win some additional games this season. It's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, so now maybe you start the season 3-11 instead of 1-13. Yeah, I just
wow, that you're negative, man.
Okay,
you don't think we're gonna win games against like Milwaukee and Phoenix and Memphis and Golden State? Those guys suck. Sacramento, Los Angeles Lakers, Milwaukee again, Boston.
How many are those at home? Because I just saw them lose to a team at home that I think is about on the same level as those teams.
Milwaukee, Phoenix, the Lakers. Those are all winnable games.
There you go. So that's the 3-11 I said. I mean, it is what it is. Other teams are trying to win too. Like,
no.
Yeah,
that's so. That is actually the weirdest thing about the season. I think we mentioned this before, though. Like, other than Philadelphia and, I guess, the Lakers, because they have that pick that they can actually wipe off the books to Orlando. And if they keep this next pick, they have to give it to Philly later, and they also get to wipe a pick off to Orlando and only have to give them, like, second rounders, which is, that's pretty major incentive. Like, other than those teams, though, Philly and the Lakers, Phoenix, would you say Phoenix is trying to lose?
No, not anybody yet. I think once we get to February, we'll have a couple teams get there. Sacramento will have a difficult decision. whether to go for the playoffs and risk losing their pick again. So there'll be some that maybe later in the season, but right now, no.
Yeah. I'm not going to make you make any sort of predictions for this Friday's game, because I think you already made your prediction. But, yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about this game?
No, I mean, just to me, I guess I just get so frustrated trying to keep up with the national narratives, because what was it, 2 weeks ago that Anthony Davis was injury prone, and now it's a no-brainer that you take Carl Anthony Towns over him,
mm-hmm.
and then you know after this game it's going to be Anthony Davis is a god, man, they need to get him some help.
Right.
You know, he's the best player in the world, or whatever they're going to say. But I enjoy watching him. I hope he stays on the court 78 games for the 10th time. I don't care how many games this team wins this year, but that was fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I'm deeply offended by the way you went after me on Twitter when I said that there's no way the Timberwolves are going to win 21 more games.
I'm deeply offended that you still think like that after we talked it out and we came to a resolution.
All right. So I guess we're done for this podcast. We'll probably be coming back on Sunday night. You good for Sunday night again?
Yeah, after you get done with your other blog.
That's right. My other secret blog that I do under a pseudonym.
Yeah, no, I think we're probably looking at 0-3, but you are going to lose these other two games anyway. So 1-2 versus 0-3, it only seems that much worse because of how little games there are, but it's just one more loss in the scheme of it.
Yeah, I mean, if they go 0-3, they just have to go on a three-game winning streak, and they're right back at 500. Piece of cake.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a rough start, but I think we saw enough positives to keep ourselves going through this year, even if us now as realists could safely say they're probably not going to make the playoffs. I still think we saw tonight that the season could still be fun, even if there's 45 losses in it.
Yep. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.